Hello, this is Len Tengis welcoming you to the iPodcast AGCMO Weekly Podcast. In each episode, we'll feature information about a contractor, specialty contractor, supplier, contracting agency, owner, or legislative or regulatory issue pertinent to the construction industry in Missouri. We'll feature industry professionals and other construction industry representatives to help our listeners stay up to date with current and future trends in construction. So here we go. Welcome back to iPodcast AGCMO. We are going to focus today on one of the key issues related to our strategic plan, which is the governmental relations, advocacy, and the work we do on behalf of the industry related to regulations, laws, politicians, all that kind of good stuff. So Denise Hasty, our Vice President for Government Relations, is our guest today, and we'll sort of get down in the weeds of what happened during the 2023 session in the state of Missouri and what 2024 may possibly look like. Denise, thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
Let's start with 2023 and maybe go through what was, you think, the direction or the biggest success we had. I know we had a number of successes, but what were those in terms of the work that AGC of Missouri did?
Well, we defended yet another session full of bills to undo, unravel, and completely negate our fuel tax increase from 2021. There were 14 different bills and joint resolutions that were filed, seven of those by one state rep who just doesn't like MoDOT. We began having to watch those carefully, particularly those in the Senate, just to make sure they didn't go anywhere, because we thought that, and we were right, that the House bills might pass the House but never survive in the Senate. But then the House bill language began being amended onto other bills as the session went forward, and it became, as our lobbying consultants say, a whack-a-mole job.
So this was another case of us being defined by what we stopped from happening.
Exactly. And in fact, we had a second very significant issue that we stopped from happening, and that was wage theft legislation that was filed.
And wage theft is sort of a misnomer, if you will, I think, as far as a name goes.
It is.
For an initiative. So what really is that legislation? What's the purpose of that legislation? Let's forget the name of it.
Yeah, I wish I could draw a direct line between the name that they use and what it really is. The legislation filed here in Missouri followed a trend about seven or eight other states, mostly blue states. And in Missouri, that bill said that a general contractor on any project could be held responsible and liable for the pay of the workers, of their subcontractors, the payroll. And it was filed on the premise that general contractors in Missouri are hiring undocumented workers and paying them cash. Well, both of those things, hiring undocumented workers and paying a worker cash, are already illegal in
the state
of Missouri.
There's already legislation that regulates that, and it's already illegal.
Exactly. And that was what we maintained. This bill went pretty quickly to the General Laws Committee in the House. It was a House bill. And we worked diligently with the members of the committee, every one of them, to explain to them what the bill really does.
What the bill basically does is make somebody who is not the direct employer of an employee responsible for the pay of that employee, whether it's one, two, or three tiers removed.
Exactly. And the Republicans on that committee literally had jaw drops when we would talk to them about how it worked. So there was a hearing, and AGC showed up in force. There were a plethora of questions by the committee for the sponsor of the bill and for the two proponents who spoke on behalf of the bill in that hearing. And they couldn't answer a lot of the questions that the committee had for them, nor could they provide examples of how often this is their premise is really happening. And then three of AGC members who act as prime contractors, although one does sometimes act as a subcontractor, but they all spoke on behalf of how the industry really works against the bill. And we had both union and open shop contractors represented in those. And that bill never got a vote out of that committee. It would have not gotten a yes vote anyway, just based on the questions, but it died right there. Except, very late in session, that same language was amended on an immigration bill while in committee, where you can't stop that language. And so a House committee substitute came out with this bad language involved in it or included in it. And so we quickly went to that state rep who sponsored that bill. He had no knowledge that that was going to get it. I mean, he didn't know what was really happening. But he was very amenable to the AGC because he wanted his bill to survive. And he let us literally direct the language to something that was tolerable to us, which essentially just mirrors current state statute. There's no reason for general contractors to be held liable for their subcontractors.
Well, there's really no reason for any contractor or any business to be responsible for someone. And it'd be like if I owned a grocery store and I sold cereal and the person who baked the cereal didn't pay the people who bake the cereal, that I would be responsible for that.
I think that's exactly how the committee saw it. And, you know, it's a slippery slope to start holding one legal corporate entity liable for the payroll of another legal corporate entity.
Sure. Everybody wants to see everybody get paid fairly.
Right. Or for that matter, for their immigration practices.
Sure. So those are two things that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. What did happen?
Well, we did support in hearings the bill in the Senate to force MoDOT to publish its bid estimates, but that did not go as we had hoped. It sort of died on the vine. That's a pretty heavy lift, and it's one of those things that
to publish the engineer's estimates.
It is. Even though a majority of other states do publish those, it's still a pretty heavy lift. And this is, I think, the second session for this bill. It'll come back and we'll keep pushing, and that's just kind of how the sausage is made. There was a texting and driving ban and a vehicle sales tax bill all rolled together that we supported. Of course, we've always worried about texting and driving for the sake of both the driving public and the work zone workers. And until August 28th, when this bill goes into effect, if you're over 21 years old, you're allowed to text and drive. This bill now, the new law, will state that you can use the auto text or the verbiage
hands-free.
Hands-free, yes. But you can talk text all day long, but you can't use your fingers and drive, no matter how old you are. But this bill also had a component that will require, once the Department of Revenue gets its has its updated software, it will require the sales tax on vehicles to be collected by the dealerships and then remitted to the Department of Revenue. And any of us that have seen months outdated temporary plates know
years.
That, yes. And so we know that the state road fund is missing out on the revenues that come from that component. So this was a good win for the state road fund. The state is deserving of the money that that we're all supposed to pay. That was a win.
That'd be registration fee theft, I would guess.
I suppose.
Yes.
And then, I consider the budget a big win. We don't get involved in lobbying for the budget components, but certainly we watched a lot and we put a lot of effort into talking behind the scenes, if you will. The House version of the budget pretty much mirrored the transportation infrastructure wishes of the governor that he did in his State of the State speech. The Senate version was like Christmas for us with regard to transportation and infrastructure, because they enlarged the I-70 program from $1.4 billion to $2.8 billion, took it statewide instead of three sectors where the traffic is the worst, and they just added a whole list of other things. But the governor does have line item veto on budget bills. So on June 30th, the last day that he could take action before the new year began for the state, he actually vetoed 201 items in the entire budget, over $550 million worth of stuff. And there were a lot of things in the transportation infrastructure that got the axe in that veto. But to be fair, a lot still remains. The I-70 improvement program at $2.8 billion didn't get vetoed. $20 million for the I-44 environmental impact study remained, and that's important because we all know, if you've driven down to 44, that highway is in just about as bad a shape as I-70. It has the same amount of traffic in a lot of ways, a lot of heavy traffic, and it needs more lanes. But it's years behind to get an EIS study done, so we got to get it ready so that when I-70 is done, we can move that direction. Low-volume roads, broadband installations still stayed in the budget, safety improvements all across the way. A lot of what disappeared in the veto process were individual projects in various regions of the state. Could have been done. Those could have been included because it helped get a vote from a legislator in a certain district. I don't know how that process, I'm sure it's how it worked, but I don't know for a fact which projects were done that way. But the governor, I think, saw the potential for the need to hold back. There are many who, I've not spoken with the governor, I'm projecting here. He has a legacy of being a transportation advocate. But that legacy can be a double-edged sword. There are many in the economic side of the state who believe that we are going to see a downturn in revenues and that spending all of this money that we have thanks to the COVID funds from the federal government would be maybe unwise. And so being a transportation advocate and leaving all of those things in the budget could make it look like he was such an advocate legacy-wise that he also broke the state. So I don't know that is his thinking, but it makes logical sense.
And I also know that some of those projects that got vetoed, that some of the local areas are taking another look at it and figuring out if there is another path forward with those. It did set them back, certainly, but I don't know that it necessarily killed all of those. I think there are efforts going forward in a number of areas to say, okay, where do we go now? Not give up.
Correct. What I don't know is how many of those deals, those votes were secured because of those local projects. And we do have a veto session coming up in September. And you can override the budget vetoes, even though the budget year has begun.
Are those on a one-by-one basis?
Yes, you can. Okay. Yeah, because they are line-itemed one-by-one. The way a veto would work is it has to start and pass by both chambers, but start in the chamber it began in, which would be the House. Obviously, there are 163 members of the House. That's a pretty big push to get consensus, because if you get consensus on one of those line items, do you get it on all of them? I don't know that they're going to try to do that, but it is not impossible.
So where does 2024 go? What are we looking at there? Who knows? I mean, that's forever in politics.
It is. It's also an election year. We have every office except the state auditor going for election or reelection. So we will have
every senator, every representative.
Half of the Senate.
Half of the Senate.
Yeah, it's always the Senate terms are every other election. So it's half of the Senate, every state rep, and every statewide except for auditor. So you've got governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, blah, blah, blah. So being an election year makes anything legislatively difficult. Everyone is calculating what every vote may cost them or gain them in that reelection process. Mm-hmm. As far as transportation infrastructure goes, I believe we'll still be playing defense. Representative Mayhew from Crocker, Missouri, will still be in office, and he is the anti-fuel tax poster child. And so I believe we will still be fighting defense on that as long as he is still in office. I believe that the wage theft legislation will make a return. I just don't see that disappearing at this point. And then AGC is planning to file an underground safety reform bill, changing the statutes that were passed in 1986 that was then called the Missouri One Call Law. Now it's called Missouri 811. The entity is called 811. You know, we're working very closely with Missouri 811. They, too, want some changes to the statute. The industry has morphed a lot since 1986. Terminology is different. Technology is different. The way the 811 Center runs is way different than it was in 86, somewhat thanks to COVID, because everything went electronic when people didn't work in offices. So we're working closely with them. We're going to try to tie the Common Ground Alliance best practices to our statutes here in Missouri, which would go a long way to keeping them from being outdated as quickly without, and would change in accordance with CGA best practices, which is a very rigorous process. And then that would allow our laws not to end up being like the 1986 law is now.
And this is really the overlapping part of what you're doing legislatively, is at the same time that this current session in 2023 was going on, the prep was already going on for this Missouri One Call safety piece, because that takes a long time to get all the proper people in the room, get everybody's perspectives from the utilities to the contractors to the other regulatory agencies like Missouri 811, and get everybody together and try to come to some agreement, if you will, of what improvements need to be made.
Yes, lots of talk and discussion have been had, and lots of preparatory work with individual legislators in both chambers, because it's a complicated issue if it's not your bailiwick. And so we have really been doing a lot with the individual legislators to bring them along and prepare them for this. In that same process, we're finding out who will be our supporters and even who we may approach for sponsoring the bills. They are, a couple of folks have actually asked to sponsor.
In addition to making the underground work safer, I know that Missouri Realtors have been leading some sort of initiative.
Well, it isn't yet a statewide coalition. It is called Safer, Simpler St. Louis County, and Safer, Simpler has a plus sign in between it. There is a website, and AGC is a sponsor, a founding member, and I sit on the steering committee. Missouri Growth Association is there. BOMA is there. I mean, we're growing constantly.
And what's the intent of the initiative?
The intent is that in St. Louis County, particularly, and this is where this began, right? It is Safer, Simpler St. Louis County. There are 80 plus, almost 90 municipalities, and each of those use different codes for every different trade, if you will, or discipline. There is thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of code. You cannot build the same Starbucks in three munis in St. Louis County and have the same code level or the same process. So we were looking to streamline the county, just like we kind of did with permitting. We're not proponents of a particular code book.
It's just trying to get some uniformity to help
exactly.
The development community, the contracting community.
Correct.
And it's really a cost-saving issue.
It is.
Ultimately.
It is. It
benefits the public in that way.
And safety.
Okay.
Following along the lines with the underground work, it's safety. So there's that, but there's nothing in this state that has a minimum code, building code. And so there's the thought that perhaps a minimum somewhere needs to be drawn. And that's been in the AGC's legislative agenda for a few years. So I don't know that that's where that direction is going, but it is a potential down the road.
So this is a we don't know, but we're involved in watching it.
We are, yeah.
Great. Anything else for 2024?
Just a lot of election stuff. There's a lot of time between now and the elections in 2024, and the AGC PAC is very engaged. We just distributed about $170,000 worth of contributions to candidates and committees and we are a force, and so it's a busy time.
And it will continue to be busy as we enter into election year. Denise, thank you so much for all your hard work, and thanks to all of our members who serve on our Governmental Affairs Policy Committee. Thanks to all of our members who contribute to our Political Action Committee so that we can do all this work. This is not done by Len and Denise. This is done by our members, by industry people, to have the industry perspective, the industry input, and the industry dollars into doing what's best for our industry.
Yep. It's a fun thing to do. It's a challenge sometimes. And without the support, the very generous support of our members, we couldn't be successful.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks again for listening. It's easy to subscribe to iPodcast AGCMO on almost any podcast platform that you use. We hope you do subscribe and continue to listen as we move forward with this important project for the construction industry. To access our prior podcasts, visit www.agcmo.org, not only for podcasts, but for additional information about AGC of Missouri.